Okay.
Welcome to the Permaculture Pimp Cast with your host, the Permaculture Pimp Daddy and the Pasture Raised Pimp. Get your recommended daily allowance of permaculture, preparedness, and practical living. Tip a pimp. Stay alert, stay alive. Permaculture is my passion. Welcome to episode 135 of the Permaculture Pimp Cast, where PIMP stands for Permaculture is my passion. The only podcast, or excuse me, PIMP cast on planet Earth, where we discuss permaculture, preparedness, and practical living. How you doing, son?
Pretty good. How are you?
Great, as always, especially as soon as I'm done here and finish doing some of the meat packing I'm doing out in the kitchen. I'm going to go jump in the shower and lather up with some Hickory Ridge soap from twooldcrowshomestead.com.
Turn that simp into a pimp.
Bam! Heaven's Harvest, y'all. 10% off with promo code PERMA, P-E-R-M-A. Look, if you were ever on the fence about getting prepared, you don't have to look very far to find all the reasons you might want to seriously consider it right now. But just remember, 10% off with promo code PERMA. And if you would like to tip a pimp, go check us out on the Fountain app. Listen to all your podcasts over there, even triple up the speeds. You can even leave questions and comments over there. And if you would like, you can tip a pimp in the form of SATs. And that's a derivation of Bitcoin. So if you'd like to drop some SATs on some PIMPs, go ahead and do it over at the Fountain app. All right, jumping straight into the farm news. Well, right off the bat, your mom and I were building an earthship. We put our hands on it for 2 days over in Crossville, Tennessee. Really, really awesome place. And they really got a lot going on over in Tennessee.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they, it's one thing to see a picture of it. It's entirely another for your mom to get a 3D view of it. And then I wanted her to see how exactly you pound a tire. I wanted her to get a little bit of experience on that because here before long, we're going to have to build a retaining wall. And honestly, the trip, there's a lot of good things about this trip. I'll get to that in a second. But one of the biggest, look, y'all, I know I tell you to go out there, go learn stuff, do this. There's that time, every single time when I do this, I will learn just one thing I didn't know that would have made the whole trip worth it every single time I do this. And in this particular time, it was how to pound a tire from this guy named Rory. He's been with Earthship probably from the very beginning.
He was there when I went there. Yeah. He's been around like 10 years before I was there.
No, probably longer than that.
He ain't that old, Dad. He just looks that old.
Well, he's pretty grizzled, man.
Yeah, he is.
My man, dude.
That's what the desert does to you.
Yeah, he looked like he'd been around a while, but I'm thinking, okay.
He's got to be like in his 30s.
Nah.
Yeah.
No
Dad,
way.
Dad, I'm
no
telling way. You, he ain't that old.
No Dad, way. That I'm dude's entirely you. Too grizzled.
I'm telling you, he's like in his 30s. He ain't old.
Well, he showed us a method, your mom and I, a method of pounding these tires where he can get it done in about 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's also him doing it too, though. He's a machine on that.
Yeah, but he showed us up close and personal how to do it. And I'm like, okay, normally I was working with somebody. It took about 15 minutes. All right, I started doing what he said. And I'm like, it can't be this, dog. Why didn't anybody teach me this after the hundreds of tires I probably pounded already? Nobody ever bothered telling me this.
I think he did a clip of it. It was either on Instagram and it was like a reel or it was on YouTube. But there is a clip of Rory teaching his method of pounding tires.
Yeah, this guy is an absolute machine. But, you know, he weighs a 105 and I'm like, you know, yeah. Let's see. And he shows how it's all physics. And then you're thinking, okay, well, was it really worth it? Yeah, well, I got a couple of retaining walls that need to go up here. And instead of just buying the blocks, I want to do it. I'm absolutely positively going to do it with tires for a couple of reasons. Number one, we are permaculture designers, and I'm going to take something out of the landfill, use it here. Plus, it's going to give me training for the Earthship that, you know, if we have an intact world for any period of time, it'll be some good it'll be some good practice. So I want to start with a couple of retaining walls that have to get done, one by the greenhouse and the other on the edge of the house. And your mom even come up with another couple of ways in which we could do this. I mean, just genius ways. that I didn't think of. So, yeah, she ain't the homestead honey for no reason. So, anyway, went out there, did that. And honestly, I did that last build out in Safford, Arizona. And then I went to this one. And I got to eat a little bit of crow on a couple of things, man. This crew was the most motivated crew of volunteers I'd ever seen in my life.
Well, it's a different crew, though.
Totally different crew.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, you're not talking about the Earthship people. You're talking about the volunteers and stuff.
Yeah, the volunteers.
You're getting people from, like, Tennessee.
Well, no, actually, we had people from all over the world. A guy from South Africa, another from Germany, a guy from Cameroon, another guy. I mean, people from all over the planet were there, and it was a joyful thing. I got some really good video of it. It's not going to be in the video, but I got some real, I mean, they're dancing on the job, but they're still working. It's just, it was just a really awesome vibe, and, you know, they had a little campfire at night, and everybody was sitting there. I got to say, the only thing I would, that had me a little bit concerned is some people brought their kids, and construction jobs are not a place to bring a toddler.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
I mean,
not even like the dangerous equipment or tools or anything like that, but just the,
you
the
got a
language.
Fire. Well, you got a fire and you got all that kind of, it's just not in any way conducive to bring children out there. So that would be the only thing, but honestly met some really awesome people. And I got to say, man, it, you may not agree with all their politics, but man, I tell you what, it does you good to be in the company of, I don't know, maybe there were 30 people there and they all had high altruism. They had these massive dreams. One guy was going to team up with a guy from Cameroon. He's going to go to his place and go help him out. That's what he's going to do. Had another girl who, or a guy, where was he from? Oh my goodness. Somewhere in Scandinavia. He wants to go to the islands, had this really great theory that he told your mom and I about how he wanted to go to the islands and do this stuff, had all these wonderful, everybody, there wasn't a person on that job that did not have a dream, no matter their age. I mean,
it wasn't a bunch of college kids filling out like an internship role.
There might have been a couple. I didn't get to talk to everybody, but every single person I spoke to, without question, there was a girl from Minnesota. There were people all over the place, and they all had very altruistic motives, man. And it was just such a joy to see so many wide-eyed young people that were looking to get into this space. They, you know, maybe their methods might be a little misguided, but man, I tell you what, it was just something really magical to be among that crowd. It was a lot different than the one in Arizona. The one in Arizona was great. Don't get me wrong. It was just a lot of people, and even the people in Arizona, they all had dreams. But out here, it was just even, it was more magical. It was very special to be around so many people that just are absolutely dedicated to do wonderful things in the world. And one of the guys I met in Safford, he's being paid by Earthship out there. His name is Will. Excellent hand. Good guy. And he lives in Tennessee, so he's not far away. And it was a joy to really link up with him and a number of others. But yeah, the altruism is really something that was just a joy to absolutely see.
Yeah.
How was everything back here?
Everything here went smoothly. It was just cloudy. It got cold out of nowhere. But that was about it. Just maintenance here. Wasn't anything crazy.
Well, and then, well, here's a crazy thing. Okay, so we get back, and it was Saturday evening. So, no, what was it?
Yeah, you got back Saturday evening.
So Sunday afternoon, your mom had, she made a first time ever working with Azure or Azure. I'm not sure how you pronounce it. And get out there. It was kind of an odd thing. There was one lady that was rather loquacious and she was nice. And there was another guy out there. Oh, man. I'll get to him in a minute because it's just, I was like, I said, you know what, Michelle? I bet we're going to meet some cool people out here. And so we go out there. And the truck shows up. So it's a big rig.
Yeah.
Old timer's up here driving this thing and he's downloading this stuff. I jump up in the truck and I'm like, okay, I'll help him download. I'm doing this. There's guys standing around, but only the women are unloading this truck. I'm like, okay, yeah. I'm putting down.
You also might, the longer you pick up from here, you also might find out more about the little community that they got going on. There might be some people in charge of downloading the truck and stuff like that.
No, there were, the guys were standing there. They were all sitting back there, you know, jaw jacking. And I'm like, I'm up in this truck downloading this stuff. And there's little girls grabbing like 25-pound bags of some of this. And I'm like, okay, man, what is going on here? I mean, do these guys clearly see these women, some of them rather infirmed, over here downloading this truck? And I'm like, man, it took everything I had to not just lose my mind. I'm like, okay, I don't get this. And I asked your mom when it was all said and done. I said, hey, was it just, she said, no, it wasn't just you. So, yeah.
That's so, Asheville men for you,
though. Yeah. Yeah. So I didn't know what that was all about. So, anyway, another thing we did today, you were getting some wood down from your little solar kiln.
Yep. Brought that up to the porch. Got just one truckload so far, just one truck bed full. I don't even know how much, I don't know how you measure a cord. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a measure. You got a rick, you got a cord.
Yeah. But I don't know how to measure that. I don't know how much wood is up on the porch, but there's a truck bed full of wood on the porch.
Well, that's a good start. I mean, it's fall, and we live in the mountains. We're at higher altitudes, so we're definitely going to need it. That's how we heat this place. Hey, y'all, look, I know all the crazy things that are going on in the world, and yes, it is. I just wanted to hit on this real quick. Oh, before I get into that, I want to tell everybody else one of the other experiments I'm doing now. All the time we're doing experiments. I did one on tactical fasting, and you know, showed that it could be done and it might be something you want to employ.
And it was even proved to work on that Alone episode that I brought up. That newest season of Alone, the guy who, well, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen Alone, the guy won using tactical fasting.
I had no idea. I thought I invented it, man.
Well, you did it before that season came out on like Netflix or whatever. But yeah, he wasn't even done with his fast when he won.
Yeah, Darren at Hacks for the Homesteader told me the same thing a while back, and I was like, dude, I didn't say anything, but I kept thinking, well, I didn't get it from this guy. I just did it because I felt compelled to do it. I didn't get it from anybody, and it turns out, like you said, I didn't even know it was being some kind of weird synchronicity. But yeah, latest thing I'm doing right now, I'm doing some real work, and I just want to let everybody know where it's going right now. I'm doing some real work on grounding, or earthing, as some people call it. And folks, I'm not even going to kid you. 3 days in a row right now. Seriously, 3 days in a row, I bought one of those grounded bed. You put it down under on your mattress. And I am a journeyman electrician, so I check this thing out, find out the cord is defective on it. So I go and make one, which is better than the original cord because I'm using number 12 copper, which is going to carry a lot more anyway. So it's going to ground. The idea is you exchange with the electrons in the earth. Folks, we've used this thing for 3 days. My wife, Michelle, has chronic back issues. And no, it was going on 4 days now. She didn't even know really pay attention to the fact that I was using this thing. 4 days in a row, she's not had an ounce of back trouble, which is a daily thing, every day for her. And I have slept, even though when I'm on the road, I usually eat a bunch of garbage. I was on the road eating everything I'm not supposed to eat, which usually means I'm going to be running to the bathroom in the middle of the night. Look, I got to be honest with y'all. I've tried this thing. Now, that thing's pricey. I'm looking into ways that are less expensive and actually better. I have never slept better I don't recall in my life ever sleeping better than sleeping on this grounded thing. And your mom, or Michelle, obviously I'm saying this to a podcast, but
yeah, she's my mom.
Yeah. She's using that thing, and she didn't even know. We were out there pounding tires, what ordinarily would just absolutely put her back in a tailspin. She had no idea. I didn't even tell her what to expect. And I asked her, I said, how's your back doing? She says, fine. You know, woke up fine. And then the next day, because we were pounding those tires all day long, next day, fine. And then, look.
So what happens if there's a lightning strike, though?
It goes to ground.
And that where you're laying?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess it could backfeed you, but that's why we got an EMP shield.
Well, okay, so that's where I was going next. Does that protect you?
Yeah, the EMP shield, boy, it better work. No, or you could. I mean, there's other ways you could go about grounding it. I mean, if you had a copper pipe in your house that was going on, if you had an older house, you could ground it to that. You could run a ground rod, like, directly under your house. Yeah, but I got to say, I've looked into it. I looked at the documentary, and I'm going to tell you, I have never slept better in my life. I know it's only 3 days in, but I'm going to keep you informed. But also, I'm looking for a less expensive method than somebody going out there spending $300 on a blanket. It's not a blanket, but it's something you put down and then put your sheets on top. I'm absolutely convinced I can do it for a fraction of the price and make it even better. because there's silver threads woven into this thing. And I understand the science. I understand what they're talking about. And I'm like, it can't be this simple. So I've been out there whenever I do my meditation or whatever, my Bible study, I'm out there with my shoes off outside and I'm doing that. And then when I hit this blanket, I'm like, man, I don't know what's going on exactly, but I thought maybe this might have been a lot of hype. So far, I am absolutely positively astonished at how well it's doing. I mean, they're, you know, in this documentary, they had babies that just couldn't seem to, there was a lady, she was an MD actually. She would walk on this, whenever she would hold her baby, she would go out in the yard and the baby would quit crying. Second, she would cross the threshold into the house, baby's crying all over again. So then she got some grounded sheets and stuff and realized, okay, now the baby's fine and she's doing better. So it was just really, really something. Watch this documentary. I think it's called Grounded. I'm not sure what it's called, or Earthing. I think that's what it was called. But anyway, y'all, this is my latest little experiment, little life hack. And I'm like, okay, it wouldn't shock me that it's really this simple.
You gonna start farming barefoot now?
Well, to some extent. I mean, you can't actually do that in a lot of places around here. I mean, you just get...
Yeah, you'd be slipping up and down this mountain.
Yeah, you gotta have something that grips into this thing. I mean, yeah, you out here working in some moccasins, man, you're going to have some problems, nephew. So anyway, you know, the elephant in the room, okay? Folks, I just want to say that it's all a lie. Everything, it's just astonishing to me how many people are fighting over this. I'm like, okay, if I gave you the same story that happened right here in America... Everybody would be asking critical questions. And folks, if you don't know, I'm talking about the stuff in the Middle East. Look, I ain't going to say it happened. I ain't going to say it didn't happen. What I do know 100% for sure is the official story is a manufactured lie. It is a lie. It could not happen unless Israel allowed it to happen. And then the more we find out, oh, you were warned by Egypt 3 days prior, huh? Same thing happened on 9/11. Bush was warned. And, you know, don't even get me started on that. But what I'm telling y'all, this whole thing is a lie. Now, there's going to be people that want to lambaste me or say whatever. I understand this is contentious for most people, but I got the goods. You want to debate me on it, we can have that debate any day of the week, and I will mop the floor with you because I don't base my judgments on anything other than the facts. And the facts are showing that this thing was about as false flag. When I say false flag, it doesn't mean that they didn't do it. It just means somebody was set up or was made to look like somebody else, or it was that actual person, but they said, hey, come on in.
And some people think it's like fulfilling prophecy as well. And they're looking at it at the back end. If you didn't know that we and Israel both funded Hamas, if you didn't know that the Iron Dome was shut down right whenever this happened, if you didn't know all these things...
A whole brigade moved off site.
But then it would look like as if it's fulfilling prophecy, which I'm sure is exactly what they were aiming for. They knew, like, it's not like they're not discovering this on the back end as well. I'm sure they did this with the full intention of thinking, oh, it's going to look very justified because it happened on a holiday and it happened 50 years and one day later after that one with the, what, 6 day war or
right,
something?
Right.
Yeah. So it's like they're aware of this. Some of these people are just now finding out about it. So they think it's very significant, but they have been aware of this.
This is you got to be a coincidence theorist to buy the official story. I mean, like I said, you got an entire battalion or brigade, I don't remember which, removed from the area. You were warned over and over again. Oh, happened to get hacked at exactly the same time. Well, guess what your standard protocol is? Is if you have a sector that's hacked, that you put your forces over there because you've been hacked.
It's like, oh, we better get away. Oh, it's been hacked.
Yeah. Oh, shucks. I guess I just had that a coming.
That means something bad's about to happen.
But yeah, as soon as you bring up any of this stuff, people want to lambaste you. But I'm really, frankly, I'm astonished and surprised in a great way of how many people aren't buying it. How many people aren't buying it? And if their thing is, well, you're anti-Semitic. Well, you know what? The Palestinians are some Semites also. So you might want to know about some of that. But folks, I'm trying to get at, there's a reason. That's exactly, I want you to stick around on this program because I'm going to tell you how they sell a lie, how they package a lie, and why it was intentionally removed from the one-room schoolhouse about 150 years ago. And my man TD over at the...
The Texas Boys, the Fearless Podcast.
Yeah. He'd probably know all about this because John Taylor Gatto is one of many people who's spoken at length about how they did away with natural mental antivirus. Yeah. And that's exactly what we're going to cover. All right, before we get into any of that, though, Mountain Readiness, y'all, October 20th through the 22nd. And I'm going to be there. I'm going to be breaking out one of my old but trusty classes on homestead knot tying. You're thinking, well, how fun could that be? Well, we're going to do a pretty cool project. And you might want to know some of this stuff because these are knots that you can absolutely use in a tactical sense. And you could also use them in a homestead. I use these knots practically every single day. And not long after that, Kentucky Sustainable Living, October 28th, 29th. That's going to be in Bowling Green, Kentucky. And you're going to want to check that one out too. They're also going to be having a fundraiser for Vets for Child Rescue. And the proceeds are going to go there to that. I've already bought 2 tickets. And I can't wait to go there.
2 of the knots you're going to teach are holding the chicken tractor on the side of a mountain right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about. I mean, these are knots that you can use in a tactical sense. Yeah. But a lot of people, they go out there and they tie knots, and it drives me crazy because if you tie the wrong knot, man, it could be a disaster if you don't know what you're doing. I'm going to show you what those knots are, how to use them, and in what places, and the best ways to go about using them. And you don't just use it. You don't use a square knot when you need a double sheet bend. Don't know what I'm talking about? Show up and I will show you. All right. So bad news. No. I got to stand corrected. Good news. And yeah, I know I got a weird way of looking at some of this good news. But from where I'm standing, it's good news. Like, first of all, this one here. Now, I take this with a grain of salt, man. It comes from the Hal Turner radio show. Sometimes that guy's had a few things right, but man, there's some whoppers that this dude has told. And, so like I said, you gotta really take this with a grain of salt, but I'm wanting it to be true. So urgent commander, U.S. troops say soldiers refusing to fight for Israel. And of course, if you read the article and it links to other articles that basically, if they don't want to fight for Israel, if they don't want to go over there, they're calling them anti-Semites. Well, I got news for you Joes out there. Yeah, when you raise your right hand, you don't get a say anymore. You go where they tell you. And, at least that's where the way I looked at it back in the day. You know, these days with my mind right now, yeah, there'd be some mutiny.
Yeah,
because they get you when you're young and you don't fully know. Well, you should know what an unlawful order is. That's one thing. But I've told the story. I don't know if I did before, you know. They tell you to go over here and kill people as a young guy. A lot of times you're so brainwashed, you're like, okay, all right. Yeah. And then I remember.
There must be a reason.
That's all you're thinking. I was so stupid at the time. It took a lieutenant, and I think I talked about him before. Lieutenant Karibori was his name. And I remember him saying, do you guys even want to know why you're asked to kill these people? And I remember it was like the second most embarrassing moment of my life. Because I didn't even know. And I was like, okay, that was my first step, my real first step of coming out of the matrix. It was the embarrassment that I felt that day, where from there I remember, let me go check out this movie, JFK. Saw that. And then I'm like, okay. And then, of course, I'm a voracious researcher. And I'm like, read everything I could get my hands on at the time. And I'm like, okay. Just like the stuff going on right now, I'm like, okay, to believe the official story, you got to be a coincidence theorist.
Yeah.
And and so 9/11, you know, all of that, but it all began at that time. But, you know, who even knows if this story's true or not? I mean, it could be disinformation. But when you get down to brass tacks on a lot of this stuff, I think a lot of the young people, it's the older, really, really, it's the people my age that are usually just buying right into the Fox News narrative. Or are buying into whatever the preacher told them, not knowing the whole story.
Yeah.
Like I said before, so this is for all those people out there putting words in my mouth. I said it before and I'll say it again. I love the Israeli people. I love the American people. I hate both of your governments because they are from the pit of hell evil with the things they've done and the things they do. So, am I a fan of Hamas? Well, let's go into what Dr. Ron Paul, like you said a little bit ago, William, who created them?
We did, and Israel.
Yeah, our State Department, along with Israel. It's a fact. So, you know, you screwed the Middle East and gave birth to a demon, so to speak, to quote Immortal Technique. So, do I love these people? No, I do not. Let me say this carefully. if you are a terrorist, you hurt people, you kill people, you deserve to go by the sword yourself. But on the flip side of all this, every bit of this is a manufactured lie.
And nobody's beyond redemption. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that you can, I mean, just because you are Muslim right now doesn't mean you can't find Christ. You know what I mean?
Well, it's, you ain't going to get the chance when they drop some Moabs on you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's like a chance of, you know what I mean? You're wiping out the chance of them ever finding.
Well,
I mean, I guess you do.
Well, how many people in Israel know Christ?
Yeah, same. Yeah.
You know, that's what I'm getting at. I mean, you go over there and you try to stand on the streets and do a Billy Graham. Yeah. You're going to the Hooskow.
But I'm talking about like the Lindsey Graham, go out there and wipe them all out, level the whole area. That, I don't understand how like a so-called Christian could justify leveling an entire area
of humans. Yes, of human beings, first of all.
You're going to bring up Sodom and Gomorrah. Go ahead. No, these people are going to bring up Sodom and Gomorrah saying, there's your justification right there.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot more. There's maybe a lot more to all this stuff than you're thinking about. But look, folks, in the modern sense, I'm not going to get in the middle of what's going on there. And then I had a friend of mine. This kind of bothered me. And it's part of what, you know what, I'll save that for the main topic. Okay. Because it's funny how the brainwashing works. Okay. So other good news. All right. So it's an IQ test. It's all an IQ test, according to Mike Adams. 10 obvious lessons every intelligent person should have learned from COVID 1.0 that can save you from what's coming with COVID 2.0. And he has a list of 10. Maybe I won't go through all of them. He says, as long as you comply with tyranny, the government will always find new reasons to act like tyrants. Okay, that's a pretty good one. Masks don't work. Even the CDC openly admits it, and he links it here in the article. Hospitals were ordered by the federal government to mass murder hundreds of thousands of people, and they gladly complied. Don't believe it? Oh, they ended up becoming murder factories when they knowingly gave people things like remdesivir and put them on ventilators, knowing full well that it would kill these people, because guess what they got? $500,000 in incentives per COVID death. Wow. Huh, that's a fact. COVID vaccines don't prevent infections or transmissions. Well, tell that to all the folks that are walking around with... It was like my one of my best friends, Jack, said. He had his father-in-law had a double mask on, and he asked me when he came over to eat dinner. He says, hey, how's that smell? And he says, oh, man, it smells wonderful. He says, you can smell that? He says, yeah. He says, well, you know, COVID particles are about 1,000 times smaller than these?
Yeah.
And he's like, dude, he might as well have been speaking Swahili. And, you know, that's just, you know, it's... No amount of evidence can shatter a faith consciously based on a lie. Oh, man, what a tagline that is. All right, the government will weaponize COVID to rig elections and destroy economies. Number six, PCR tests for infection diagnosis are a complete fraud. Yeah, that came from Kerry Mullis. You know, the guy who invented the doggone test? Yeah, your doctor was bribed to push unsafe, unproven COVID mRNA jabs and gladly went along with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really did.
Yeah.
So just because a person has MD doesn't mean medical deity. You know what?
And just because they suggest something doesn't mean it's a good idea.
Yeah. Jolyon West was a doctor. You know who else? Yeah. Joseph Mengele. He was a doctor. Some of the biggest mass murderers. Oh, Fauci. That's a doctor.
Using the excuse that my doctor prescribed this to me is no longer an excuse. It's no longer a valid excuse, because you can write like instantly find out, like research exactly what he's trying to prescribe you and find out what's actually going on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So that's good news. You know, I'm going to call that good news because it's part of that mental antivirus that I'm going to be talking about here in a minute. You don't have to believe these people. You know, one of the things, some, when you see a person in a lab coat on a billboard sign saying, take this drug, what fallacious argument is that? What logical fallacy would that be if you see him in a lab coat?
An appeal to authority.
Why? What is that? What is that meant to do? What is
the lab coat? You're supposed to suspend like all of your prior knowledge because this person of authority is telling you this information.
It's why the lab coat was invented. It was to create a
distinction.
Yeah, to give someone to make you think that they were really. I mean, man, my brother. When he was in medical school, my oldest brother, man, it was so doggone embarrassing.
I'm getting a purple lab coat.
He walked around, honestly, when he was in med school, I was in high school, and he would walk around. I mean, he would go to the Circle K, and he's wearing a lab coat. And I was thinking, even as a kid, I was like, come on, man. Can you be any more embarrassing? It's just so you could tell everybody you're in med school. It was Oklahoma hot, and I'm out there playing football 2 days in the middle of summer, but you got a lab coat on it. I'm like, man, I don't know him. I'm like, this is embarrassing.
I'll meet you in the car.
Yeah. I'm like, come on, man. Anyway, it was an appeal to authority. That's what it was meant to do. All right. So another one. This is another good news. Okay. This is actual good news, y'all. Kind of. Anti-parasite. Don't even get me lying about how to say this one. Benzimazelidoid drug shows promise for treating cancer, but remains suppressed by the FDA. Well, reason I'm, oh, check this out. Here's why I brought this up. Okay, when I was making that drop over there, there was one of the guys who was helping. He actually showed up a little bit late. And, no, you know, everybody was supposed to basically download the truck from Azure.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'm helping other folks load their stuff up. And then finally, I get to load my stuff up. Nobody's helping me. And except at the last moment, this one guy does grab a couple of bags, he and his daughter, and they start helping. And I'm not upset about it. I'm like, okay, that's just what it is. So this other guy, I see there's more stuff over there. And I'm like, before we get out of here, let me grab this stuff. He pulls up in a dump truck.
Dang.
And he, your mom and I help him carry his stuff over there. Now, I brought this story up for a reason. Okay, so basically, there's this anti-parasite drug. And it's supposed to be some wonder for treating cancer, which, you know, by the way, is knocking out parasites. Turns out the guy we go to help over there, load up all this stuff in his truck. We strike up a conversation, and he's very loquacious. I mean, this guy is telling us everything you want to know. Well, he is literally, he's opened up a shop out there in Marshall, North Carolina. I think I'm going to actually get an interview with him at some point in time. Incredible background. Dropped out of med school, dropped out as a lab scientist, became a scientist, and he actually has quite a successful multi-million dollar business where with natural means, they cure mostly women's issues, mostly menopausal type things that women suffer with, and they do it all naturally. And so he is literally telling us when he was working this conversation, we stayed there an hour probably talking to this guy, and he's explaining to us how when he was working in these giant labs, how they were literally taking blind people. He was talking about this project they did in Japan, and they would shoot this stuff into their ocular or optic nerve. People that have been blind, A, all of their lives, people that have been blind for, I don't know, a year or two, all of them regained their sights like within an hour.
Oh, wow.
And these were like trials that they did over there in, you know, he said it was like limited to Japan at that particular time. And he's like going to the people like, hey, why is this not hitting the market?
Yeah.
Why is this not happening? And then he had talked about some of the other things where it is like stuff that would give the blind the ability to see, and all these people that are dying of cancer and these other, you know, dreadful diseases, that they literally have this stuff. And I was like, he's telling me this stuff. He has no idea what I talk about, what I do.
Right.
He has no idea. And then I come across this article today, so it made me think of him. So at some point in time, I'm going to stop by there. And he and his wife basically came from California initially, passed up a lot of lucrative stuff to basically come here, grow all the herbs they need because this is, and he had, he had a number. When he found out we sold comfrey, he's like, oh man, I got to link up with you folks. There's a lot of comfrey that goes into what we do. And I'm like, okay, man, well, basically he's a chemist. Hmm. And it was just incredible that he's telling us this very story about all these drugs that are put on the shelf. Like I said, had no idea what I do.
Yeah.
Has no idea my background, what we're doing. I'm just asking about him. And I'm like, okay, once again, just like going to the Earthship, just to learn that one thing was worth the trip. To go there to Azure, however you pronounce that thing, and to be around all these guys that weren't helping at all. If nothing else, it was worth it just to meet that guy.
Hey, Eric Sider here with your PimpCast tip of the day. Today's tip, don't reinvent the wheel. If you must know the rules before you can break them, so too must you try proven strategies and techniques before you can change them. I am all for adapting and modifying things to better suit your specific situation. We can all benefit from that. But to make unproven changes to chase fame or profits is just a waste of everyone's time and energy. As Bill Mollison writes, there are many opportunities to create systems that work from elements and technologies that exist. Perhaps we should do nothing else for the next century but apply our knowledge. We already know how to build, maintain, and inhabit sustainable systems. Every essential problem is solved. That was written in 1988. Here we are, 35 years later, still waiting for the next great invention to solve all our problems. You could spend a lifetime simply installing mainframe permaculture design across the world without inventing anything new. Not only would it be one of the greatest gifts for humanity, it would be considered revolutionary. You can find me on YouTube and Instagram at Eric Sider, and if you're in need of permaculture t-shirts or remote permaculture consultation and design, head over to ericsider.com.
That's my dog.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. That's what I'm talking about, boy. He hit a mouthful right there, man. All the people that come up that will whack out a design just to try to make it original.
Yeah, you're
or be famous.
Let me tell you something that you probably didn't know. Your property is not special. Like, it doesn't need, like, 99.99% of the time, it doesn't need like a brand new reinvented some sort of design. Like, if you just stick to the basics, most of the time it's going to work.
That's exactly the thing. You know, when you get down to brass tacks and a lot of this stuff, if you just do the main, just it's revolutionary already.
Yeah.
It's, you don't need to, oh, well, instead of doing a regular swale, I'm going to do this.
A Hoover Mound swale.
Yeah, well, okay, now you got a mudslide, or now you're doing something that was totally unnecessary, added way more work. Folks, do you know how many jobs I literally have walked out on because they wanted me to do something stupid and inefficient?
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, you can ask, man, believe me, I can't work for nobody else. When it comes down, well, I can, but the point being is I don't care what position, unless I was in a hard spot. There's been a lot of times they ask me to do something stupid, and I'm like, well, you know, there's a better way of doing this. And just out of principle, I will quit. I'm like, no, I don't do stupid. Or it'll be some dope who's just so obstinate. No, this is my idea. We're going to do it this way. Okay, well, do it by yourself, Jack, because I'm out. And the one guy I did say that to, his name was Jack. Yeah, he was a complete lunatic. Total basket case. But anyway, you know, Eric's absolutely right. But that's the thing that gets me is that the people who are trying to change things up just to become famous or, you know, those are the ones I really don't like. There's some really solid stuff that currently exists. Master that first. Then worry, you know, you don't learn how to slam a basketball first. You learn how to dribble.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's how it rolls. All right, that's my man. So check it out. EMP Shield, EMP Shield, y'all, $50 off with promo code PERMA. Remember, the number one threat to you and your family is going to be lightning. And like I was talking about the grounding a minute ago, if it gets past all that and I don't get Kentucky fried, well, if I did, it ain't just going to be that 25 G's that EMP Shield's paying out. Maybe somebody's going to get that. Well, no, honestly, it doesn't work that way. It'll all go to ground anyway. But the point being is when you get down to this stuff and you look into it, your number one threat is really lightning. And that's what it protects. So if it gets past your EMP Shield and it makes it on down and blows up something off the wall, guess what? They're going to cover you for 25 G's. Nobody else does it that way. As a journeyman electrician with 25 years, believe me, this is the best product of its kind out there. There ain't a close second. All right, so remember, promo code PERMA. All right, so we're going to jump straight into this. And folks, in light of everything, I can't believe I haven't done this show before. I kind of teased it out in YouTube videos in the past and never really spent a lot of time going into it. And I'm not going to right now. In fact, this is like a, if I'm going to go in a decent, if I'm going to make you conversational in any of this stuff, it's going to take a little while, but you can get the cliff notes right now. All right. So what made me think of this? I'm driving home from that part of Tennessee. Michelle and I are in the vehicle. Had to stop by some store so she could pick up a pair of boots. And that was like just outside of, you know, some other town. And then I realized I realized a friend of mine called, and I get on the phone with him. Your mom jumps back in the car. We're driving down the road, and I'm thinking, okay, do I even want to bring this stuff up in the Middle East? Do I even want to do it? I know this guy. I know him well. I know his he's a good friend. In fact, I was in his wedding years ago. And I'm like, man, do I actually want to go ahead and bring it? Oh, okay, why not? And next thing I know, I'm talking to him about, you know, what's going on in the Middle East. And, you know, he's basically saying, I mean, it was not that shocking, but to a certain extent it was, because I hear him saying some pretty awful things about what ought to happen. And then I was like, he asked me what I thought. And I'm like, well, dude, I don't believe any of it. I don't, there is not one element of this. He says, well, what don't you believe? I'm saying, well, concerning the security protocol, you would have to have, if you had 10 things that had to go wrong for this to happen, yeah, all at the same time, they would all have to go off at the same time. This would have been a suicide mission unless all of these things happened at the same time. So there's nobody that's going to tell me that Israel didn't know, or at least some element of Israeli intelligence or whatever, didn't know this was going to happen. It's an impossibility. And the bigger impossibility is that it went on. These guys apparently got time to rape people. You're not worried about a quick reaction force coming in there blowing you away.
Right.
You're going to stop and, oh, hey, we just murdered a bunch of people. Let's do the rape. I mean, it just, every part of the story, the hang gliders, none of it made any sense. And his response to me was, why would they, okay, he says, why would they do something like that? And then I'm thinking, I realize he has his logic before his grammar. He put his logic before his grammar. I'll come to that in a moment. I'm like, why? I said, well, don't you think there's some, I don't need to answer the why. I just need to know. And I'm trying to condense this because I can't possibly give him all of this at once. I'm like, I don't need to know the why. All I need to know is the who, what, where, and when. And if I find contradictions in any of that, I can't even get to why. I can't explain why until I know the who, what, where, and when. And he wasn't really getting it. And I'm like, okay, I'm just going to change the topic. So that brings me to our topic right now. And it's mental antivirus. Let me give a little bit of a historical backdrop on this. Now, I might lose a couple of people on this, but look, it's probably one of the most important shows I've ever done. And frankly, it's a little embarrassing. I haven't done it before. So I'm going to ask, you're going to have to do a little homework on this if you want to look further into it. Now, years ago, I talked about how if you were a Roman slave, if you purchased your freedom, which was entirely possible for you to do, if you were a slave and you purchased your freedom, the first thing you were required to do was to get yourself an education in what was called the trivium. It means three roads. Of those three roads, it's grammar, logic, and rhetoric, and it's in that order. It gave you, the reason why slaves were not allowed to know the trivium is because the trivium was mental antivirus. In fact, brought up John Taylor Gatto a little while ago. Two things happened 150 years ago. I'm not even going to tell you the second because it'll, most people would not allow themselves to believe it. First, I'm not even going to cover number two, but one of the things that was done is that the trivium was systematically removed from the one-room schoolhouse. In fact, we basically got away from the one-room schoolhouse and came up with the compulsory education, as Gatto calls it. Now, what had happened then? Under that one-room schoolhouse, people were taught the trivium, grammar, logic, and rhetoric in that order. Now, my response to my friend is going to make a little more sense after I explain this. And like I said, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, but it's why it is so easily, there's a lot of people that demonstrate understanding of the trivium without even knowing what it is. A lot of you are probably listening to this program right now where you hear something, it doesn't sound right, you don't even know how to explain it, but you know it's a lie. It's because you're already hardwired with the trivium. A lot of times it takes an education to bring it out in most people or to get into specifics. Okay, so here's how it works. Trivium means three roads, grammar, logic, and rhetoric. Under grammar, you ask these questions. Okay, so we're told A bunch of hijackers took a plane and ran it into the World Trade Center. Okay?
Yeah.
Before you answer why, you have got to answer, and this goes all the way back to Alexander the Great that we know of. You would ask the questions, who, what, where, and when. When you got answers to those questions that did not contradict each other, that was grammar. Who, what, where, when. The why is the logic, despite what everybody talks about. Who, what, where, when. Then you can answer why.
Right.
And then logic, grammar, who, what, where, when, logic, why, and rhetoric was how. So that's a demonstration of wisdom. Like I said, I can't go into all of it right now. I was never taught this. I had to learn this. Took a lot of hours of study to become pretty conversational at this stuff. So when you hear somebody, here's one of the examples. Straw man arguments, okay? Appeal to authority. Son, what if somebody were to say to you, if you say, well, why do you do it that way? And their response is, well, it's always been done that way. What is that?
It's, well, an appeal to tradition. Yeah.
Yeah. So these aren't asked. These are logical fallacies, fallacious arguments. And it's really hard for me to condense all this, folks, but I'm doing this because if you get yourself an understanding, because all of the news media, what they do, they always give you the who. They never give you the who, what, where, and when. They will give you the why. Think about it. Think about it. Every major story, they give you the why before telling you the who, what, where, and when.
Yeah.
And if they do give you the who, what, where, and when, if you were able to examine it, you would realize that they were throwing out, I don't even know how many fallacious arguments. So they do this stuff to take you off the trail, to lead you astray. And, you know, they'll, you know. It's,
the who in this question with the whole thing with Israel and Hamas, you should stop at the who and already have questions as to why, like why they're, like you should already have questions because the who is Hamas, in a Palestinian terrorist organization that Israel and U.S. funded. Like that, you should stop there and think, okay, something's going on because we both funded them. And now they're saying they attacked Israel without anybody knowing.
Yeah, anybody that thinks, oh, well, we're all wet on that. Well, go check out what Ron Paul said, and he knew where all the bodies were buried on such things. And, you know, that's only the tip of the iceberg. So the point of it being, y'all, unless they answer in these news stories, I can literally, if I were going through and we're watching a news story, fallacious argument, which is basically a lie, fallacious argument after fallacious argument after fallacious, they are not, and when you're in that state, when you're watching, when you're in alpha brainwaves, which is what you are when you watch TV, you're in an alpha state. And you might even be in a theta state for some people. But when you're in that state, you're already highly suggestible.
When I think kids hit that theta state.
Yes, they do. Yeah, in fact,
I think kids do.
Watch kids standing in front of a TV screen with the flicker rate and everything else, and you can see them. They turn into flipping zombies.
Yep.
Absolute zombies, especially kids. It was the freakiest thing I ever saw when I saw my niece and nephew one time, and they're just standing there like drones, jaw agape, rocking back and forth. I'm like, oh, no, turn that thing off.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, so you're already in an alpha, and then kids, young kids anyway, are already in that state a lot of times anyway. For adults, when you sit down and watch the media, that's exactly what they know, that you're not in a beta state. In the beta, you're going to be a little bit more inquisitive and maybe a little more alert about what you're being told, maybe even highly stressed. But when you hit alpha, oh, yeah, that's another thing entirely. The flicker rate is already designed to put you in alpha, and now they're hitting you with all these logical fallacies. Because you're in alpha, you're less likely to say, huh, that sounds weird. That doesn't make sense. I don't know if I want to buy that.
Yeah.
So remember, y'all, like I said, this isn't going to be a long thing. I want you to look into the trivium. We could talk about the quadrivium, but that's not important right now, that because that's way more advanced. There is something called, first you would learn the trivium. You would master that. As a child in ancient cultures, you would have mastered that really probably by the age of 8, 9, 10, maybe somewhere around there. Hmm. You would already have a pretty good understanding, and then you would start working on the quadrivium, which is four roads, We'll talk about that maybe another program. But the reason why I'm saying this is that this mental antivirus was systematically removed from the one-room schoolhouse in America 150 years ago. And if you will, and if you also knew what was inserted at exactly the same time in churches at about 150 years ago, you might be saying,
Leave it in the comments if you know.
What comments?
On YouTube or on the Fountain app.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. Yeah, we'll just do that. Tell me. Okay, so I just gave you one half. Yeah, this is kind of neat. I gave you one half. The trivium was removed from the one-room schoolhouse 150 years ago. What was added, not necessarily in the schoolhouse, but in the church house? Yeah, tell me what was added 150 years ago. Happened at exactly the same doggone time. All right, folks. Here we'll be. I'm losing my tongue here. All right, so I hope this was a help to you. Look, who, what, where, when, that's grammar. Why, logic, and the rhetoric is how. Who, what, where, when, why, and how. That's why I named my pigs those. And by the way, they're all in the freezer now. So,
or that's, friends' freezers.
Yeah, so yeah, we fed a lot of people with those words. So, yeah, there's a reason we're talking about this, folks. There's a reason why it was neglected. So go out there. Like I said, all I can do in the time that I have allocated on this program is to give you the Cliff Notes. All right. Hopefully that was a blessing to you. Be back in a second. Message from Chef Snow.
Hey, Chef Keith Snow with HarvestEating.com. And I want to answer a question from David. So the question goes like this. And this is what David asked. Basically, when he gets his share of beef, and many people are buying, you know, a quarter or a half of beef, and the packages will say different things on them. A lot of times you'll get something called boiling beef. And when you get boiling beef, David's question is, what do I do with boiling beef? So boiling beef is generally going to be tougher cuts like chuck roast or brisket. These are going to be best for long cooking, not necessarily boiling though, because if you boil it, you'll make it tough. So a slow simmer or a braise is going to be the best way to do that. And that's not going to be submerged in liquid, but it's going to be a wet braise. So maybe you have a big chunk of meat in there and there's an inch or two of liquid that could be wine, stock, it'll have aromatics in it. Those are going to be the best ones to boil and turn into things, not to boil, but to braise and turn into things like stew, beef bourguignon, all types of very low and slow and wet cooking dishes. And those are amazing, particularly when you use red wine and herbs and that sort of thing. Now, be careful, because depending upon who marked these packages, there are some that are going to be terrible for this. Like eye of the round roast, that's not going to go well. Or bottom round rump roast, any of those. You don't want to cook those for a long, long time, because they'll get very, very dry. Also, a tri-tip roast, not good for that type of cooking. So look for things like chuck and brisket. Cook them in a very wet environment, and hopefully you have a tight fitting, like a Dutch oven with a nice lid on it, and you'll be in good shape. Want to encourage all of you to check out my website, harvesteating.com. Go to the store and look for my spices. I am bringing back my organic spices. I do have thousands of customers that have bought those through the years, and I hope you all give some a try. Take care, everyone. We'll see you the next time.
I'll tell you one thing that's really cool is taking some of those really, really lean, like the rump and some of those others. Mm-hmm. That's it. Look, if you're going to do jerky and stuff, y'all, those are the cuts you want to use, because when you do the jerky, if it's very, very lean, it'll store longer. So yeah. Less fat, yeah. You got on it.
And you can make some actual manly jerky, not the pre-chewed stuff you can get the store.
Yeah, we need something a little more butch around these parts. We've got one here from Mark. He says, you've given me recommendations before for veggie seed gardens. Thank you. Taking your advice on searching for organic fruit trees. Okay, in a nutshell, he's asking where you go to go get trees right now, and they're tough to find. Folks, you might actually be a little bit floored here. Believe it or not, you might check Etsy. I've done that in the past to great success. Now, there's times where you're going to come across some some real boo-boos around there, but when you can't find anything anywhere else, believe it or not, there's probably somebody on Etsy that might be able to hook you up and for a good price. A lot of nitrogen fixers, that's where I've been going to get them. If I didn't have them close, or you know, some of the local places might be charging quite a bit, you can get them there.
So, it's as if Eric knew this guy asked this question. He says, check stores like Lowe's and Home Depot for discounted plants/trees in fall and winter. They are looking to make space for seasonal displays and don't want to keep trees over winter. I've seen 50% off plus discounts.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was his comment.
You know, I was going to say, I saw some up there at the grocery store. And then when the leaves are off, believe it or not, that's the best time to plant.
Oh, yeah.
But they know that it doesn't look appealing. You might even talk them down even more. I saw some sitting out in front. And I was like, man, I got half of mine to go pick them up.
Wait till the leaves fall off and say, hey, how much do you want for these Charlie Brown trees out here?
Yeah, what do you want for these things that don't, man, they look awful rough. Yeah, you probably may get away with a killing.
Got one from Nitro Soil. Two questions on raised beds. What material for the walls do you recommend? Normal lumber, treated lumber, hardy plank, railroad ties? Two, do you fill your raised beds with pure compost from something like an 18-day pile or some custom mixture, like Square Foot Gardener book, something else? What do we do?
Well,
definitely don't use railroad ties on your raised beds.
No, sir.
And I wouldn't use treated lumber either.
No, when we bought like store-bought lumber, it was always, we've done Shosugibon on it.
Yeah.
And it didn't have any junk in it, but I'll tell you the best way to go about it was like James over at, I don't even know if he has that online.
I don't know. He might have it on Instagram. He might have it on YouTube. But if you look up Strand Farm, you'll find both.
I think it's a beautiful way of doing it where he's just basically splitting the lumber right down the middle. And, you know, he's taking some of them Scandinavian roots of his and he's putting it to work out there. And I got to say, it looks beautiful. That would be when I redo these or when I have to do them again, that's exactly what I'm going to do. It looks better. I just think it fits with the whole motif. And as far as what we fill them with, you can put all compost in there. I mean, if it's good compost.
I usually recommend people like do 3/4 topsoil that maybe you either harvested yourself or purchased, and then top dressing the last quarter with compost. Because that compost is going to, the worms are going to make the exchange if it has access to the ground. The worms are eventually going to make the exchange between the compost and the raised and the topsoil that you put in there.
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways you can go about it. Just get started one way or the other. Look, things are consequential, man. Do what you can. Says, good day, pimps. Basically, well, he says, I've not found a breeder that focuses on parasite-resistant sheep in Norway. Good night, man. I would have figured you guys got some pretty good sheep up there. He says, I have three options. Breed in the Norwegian wild sheep, basically unchanged since the Viking age. It sheds its wool and births easily, and it's generally healthy, but low butcher weight. I would have to select breed to get parasite-resistant flock. He said, a breed of Dorper, and then he says, import parasite-resistant sheep from Europe. I see paperwork being a nightmare, and it's expensive. He's asking how we could do it, and he's a big fan of the show. Thank you, my man.
You know, the comment that stood out to me the most was the fact that he said he's got to import them from Europe and he's in Norway.
Yeah.
And in America, we're thinking, that ain't that the same thing?
Yeah. He's like, well, Texas, ain't that the same as New York? Yeah. Or Oklahoma?
Yeah.
Which might as well be the same. Pretty close anyway. It's hard to say because I don't have any experience in your environment, but I will say that anything closest to where you currently live, that would be what I favor. And surely there's got to be somebody in there that's doing something that's very, I'm always, even if it's a smaller breed, usually the smaller breeds when it comes to sheep, pretty much everything is going to be, they seem to be way more parasite resistant. So I would any day of the week take a smaller breed over something that's big that I'm going to have to shoot up with any kind of drug or anything like that.
Especially if it's a breed that's been doing well since like the Vikings. If it does well in that environment, if it births well, there's no issue with the smaller sheep, I don't think. They might even be easier to titrate the quantity while you're learning how to graze, if you don't already know how to graze.
I would definitely go with the ones that are more native. Yeah. And as best you can, try to find. Now, you're going to have to keep them moving. That's important with sheep, you know. as long as you can keep them guys moving and as long as you don't have them hit the same ground in, you know, too close a period of time, you give them what they need and they can usually work out some of that. You're going to have to still call heavily and definitely, you know, go. That would be my vote. Dorper, I like Dorper. That's a good hair sheep. And as far as the parasite resistance out of Europe, man, I would definitely go for what's most native.
Yeah.
I would definitely go with what's most native. Thank you so much, my man.
Got one from Strider47 on the Fountain app. What's the definition of permaculture? Well, it depends. Also, you forgot to announce the new segment, Going Sideways. At this point, it may as well be recognized as part of the show. Every time y'all say you don't want to go sideways, I think of the Emperor Palpatine meme, do it. Okay, time to listen to the rest of the show. Hashtag tip a pimp, hashtag do it, hashtag it depends.
Bam. Thanks, Strider. Always good stuff there. So Matthew says, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I got a lifetime membership to Nicholas Bertner's online PDC. I've talked about it a lot, but getting a PDC, basically, he likes the idea that, you know, he's busy with college and he's got a lot going on right now, and he can get to it when he's able. And anybody out there that's looking to do a PDC, well, that's a very affordable one, the most affordable one I know of. Now, for the 25 buck version doesn't mean you're necessarily going to walk out with a certificate, but do you really need that? I mean, if it means something to you.
One person ever has asked for my certificate.
No, that's a fact.
Yeah.
That's a fact. Nobody's ever, you know, now that you said nobody's ever asked for my credentials.
Nobody's asked me once. Like, I get asked more often about college than I do about my certificate.
Wow.
Yeah. Got one from Summerhill Homestead on the YouTube channel. Check us out on YouTube if you haven't already. How late in the fall can you plant fruit trees?
Well, it depends on your area. In places, well, did they say where they're from?
Nope, that was it. Somewhere, I'm guessing, sunny.
Okay, so let's say in a place like Texas, we wouldn't plant. I mean, there were times we didn't plant our fruit trees. The leaves didn't come off sometimes until, January.
Yeah.
I mean, that wasn't uncommon. Here, I can actually plant a tree in late October, mid-October even, early November. I mean, and I'm plenty good. So it really depends. Hey, your golden rule is going to be whenever the leaves come off of your deciduous trees, it's usually a pretty good time to plant.
Yeah. So I mean, it could be like late into January, depending on where you are, or it could be right now.
Yeah.
It just depends. Wait for the leaves to fall off, though. Yeah. And then you, like, how late into the fall can they plant trees? I would say how long before the leaves start coming off?
Well, it could be the dead of winter sometimes.
Yeah.
Where you're doing it. It all depends on the location you're at. But generally, your rule of thumb is when the leaves are off, that's a pretty good time to start.
Before the ground freezes. How about that?
Well, that's what I'm saying. There's so many variables in there. I mean, are you in Minnesota,
yeah,
Montana, you know, Maine? You know, it's going to be different than anybody down in Mississippi.
Yeah.
So, hey, Billy and William, how do you guys deal with pest control inside the home? Spiders, roaches, flies, wasps, mice, ants. How do you deal with them, especially in regards to food storage and firewood storage areas? That's a really good question. Here, that's part of why I got these cats. Well, we got one cat that doesn't do crap, and then we got another cat that's a stone-cold killer. And so they keep them in balance as far as the mice and stuff like that goes. I'm not worried. Now, when you have, like you said, when you're feeding animals, you're always going to have a mouse population. But if you have a good mouse cat, then they're going to keep them in balance for you.
Yeah, and Ginger's out there serial killing.
Yeah, wasps. Now, that's another controversial thing. I don't really mess with wasps. To me, you got a lot of parasitic wasps. They're doing the right thing out there in terms of, there's a lot of things that don't make it because of those wasps. They just look nasty. And a lot of times they don't even mess with you.
A lot of pests that don't make it because of those wasps.
Right. Spiders, unless it's a black widow or a brown recluse or, well, what we used to call in Oklahoma, fiddleback. If it's any of those, then yeah, you're going to have to give up the ghost. But outside of that, I'm really not too worried about it.
Yeah. Snakes get composted or fed to the chickens.
Yeah, one snake's in the compost pile right now. About stepped on him the other day. Flies, stuff like that. It's just some things you just got to work with or stay. You know, there are other things that can keep them in balance. There's always like a weak 2-week period out of every summer here where the flies just, the little gnats, man, they just go nuts. Yeah. It's like a 2-week period, and I'm not sure there's anything you can do about it. You just suck it up and drive on.
Got one from IG Dolls 1 on the YouTube channel. These were all things I wondered. He's talking about the Oklahoma City bombing episode. He said, these were all things I wondered about but never found answers until now. I would love for you and William to maybe do some podcasts of some of the truths about the events you have hinted at, especially considering how the outside world seems to be cascading out of control. I've been hearing a lot of info about what really happened going clear back to the Civil War. All of that info that has been quashed by the media and the public education system.
Yeah, there's so much there. I would love to do a show where I covered a lot of that, but it's going to take a lot of research. I mean, I could do it off the top of my head, and I'd probably get most of it right, but I want to do that topic right. I could do it in a convincing way. There's so many others out there that are doing that sort of thing, and I kind of box myself in a corner when I call it the Permaculture Pimpcast, is that it doesn't really, I don't know that it gives me a whole lot of leverage to talk about these other things. I'm just doing it because I think it's a public service announcement. I think people need to know this stuff. I think people need to know the full extent of the lies out there, because what good is permaculture if we ain't got a planet to put it on?
Yeah, or people to feed.
Yeah. So Samantha, hey, we keep messing up her last name. He said, this is the second time your son mispronounced my last name. It's Rickerson. It's, hang on, let me make sure I got this right. It's Richardson. Not Rickerson. So yeah, you're looking
Richardson.
At it. You just did it wrong again.
Which one is it?
Richardson.
Richardson. Richardson?
Richardson.
Okay.
Hey, from now on, I'm pronouncing this one, son. You just got it wrong after I said don't do it
well,
wrong. Yeah, okay.
Hey, all right, Samantha. Hey, I'll just call you Samantha.
Samantha, hey, don't. That was on him. It wasn't me.
I'll just call you Samantha from now on.
Just get these names right. No, it's easy. That's one of those ones where I could see how your eyes could just be kind of moving on a little too quick and
yeah,
just kind of get it wrong. Let's see here. So
I got another one.
Okay, go ahead.
I got one from the Philippine Nomad. More, and this is the same episode, Oklahoma City bombing episode. More censorship. One of my MP4 converters says downloading YouTube video is disabled because it violates the YouTube terms of service. No problemo. Another converter worked just fine. You don't have to do that. We have a podcast. You can just listen to the podcast if you want to.
Yeah, speaking of which, hey, y'all, the only way a lot of this stuff is going to get out is if you tell your friends. And also fill out or, you know, leave a review anywhere you're listening to this right now. I know some of you may be at work, but yeah, try to do that. It helps us out. It helps get the word out. Because the powers that shouldn't be, the last thing they want to see is somebody like me talking like I am. And they don't want this getting out there. And the only way that it does is if you deliver it or you kind of, you know, spike the algorithm so much that other people got to go check it out. So here we are. Steven says, Honorable Pimps, a friend of mine runs a fruit drink shop, food truck, and throws away about 1,000 to 2,000 pounds of fruit scraps in a week. Wow. He knows that he's got a potential value in all this, but doesn't know how to monetize it. We're both full-time truck entrepreneurs, and setting up a chicken farm is really something they don't have time to do. So any ideas on how to turn this trash into money? Yeah, you know what? I'd go to, if you can't do it yourself, you might put it on Craigslist.
Yeah,
market it to pig farmers, chicken farmers. Say hey,
or get on freesteading.com.
Yeah, I haven't been on there in a while. But you can go to Craigslist. I mean, there's a number of different places you could say people are going to be like a little bit like it's all in how you package it. Say, look, save tons on raising your pigs or chickens with, and then just kind of tell the story. I mean, I think this would generally sell itself. Because there ain't no way on earth with 1,000 to 2,000 pounds, and I don't know where you're located, but I guarantee some pig guy or chicken guy or gal is going to want this stuff.
How often did he say it was?
Per week.
Oh, wow.
Wow, man, that's a whole lot of fruit, off of fruit drinks, man.
Where are you?
I don't know, but he said, oh, yeah, he's a Kettle Corn, Texas guy.
Huh.
Kettle Corn guy from Texas.
Wow.
So, man, that's a whole lot of fruit.
Now, that's unless it's, I wonder if it's like citrus.
Oh, yeah.
It, now, like from the lemonade matter. And stuff like that.
Yeah, that's something else. Now, that's going to be, Yeah, if it's a lot of citrus and stuff like that, they're not gonna. You're gonna have to separate that. And that might be a pain. That might be a bridge too far.
Yeah.
Unless you have two different trash cans, because all your citrus, you don't want to be giving that to chickens or pigs. I mean, neither one of them really care for it much.
Yeah, they both kind of leave it alone. Got one from Old McDonald Homestead. Hey guys, I'm clearing an area of pine trees to plant more fruit trees and nut trees. What would you guys pop the stumps of? Would you guys pop the stumps of the pine trees or cut them off at ground level and leave roots and all in the ground? Thanks. God bless y'all.
Yeah, if I'm cutting down pines or anything like that, I'm going to take, and I've done a video on this in the past. It's probably a couple of years ago, where literally I'll take my Unibit, run some holes out there, run a half inch bit down through the stump. And then if you just put urine on it, because at the time we were using composting toilets, you pour urine down those stumps. Number one, they ain't coming back. And before you know it, you're basically composting in place. I mean, you got carbon combined with the nitrogen of your urine, and it will basically compost in place. It depends on how big a rush you're in there. I wouldn't even yank the roots up out of there. I'd let them. No.
I would just cut it off at the ground level.
You could do a stump grinder. But if you're going to do all that and you want to get rid of that kind of, you know, within a couple of years, yeah, that's one trick right there. I'm not going to go through the trouble of yanking that thing out of there, because so much good biomass that you're taking that along with it. Let's see. Ryan says, I was wondering if you guys ever experimented with adding rooting hormone to your comfrey cuttings.
No. We've experimented not with rooting hormone, but with like comfrey tea almost. But that's about it.
Yeah, but it was like, comfrey was part of the rooting hormone.
It was
with willow.
Yeah, but that was a separate experiment years ago. But no, we haven't used that for the rooting hormone, or used rooting hormone on the comfrey.
It never needs it. It's just,
yeah,
just put it in the ground. It does its thing. Got to keep some water on it though.
Got one from Laurel Anderson. Are these heritage apple trees naturally resistant to the cedar apple rust fungus?
Which heritage apples?
I think she's talking about the ones like that Sherman had cut down, because it's referring to that episode, the last episode we did, talking about getting the food forest ready for winter. Are these heritage apple trees naturally resistant to the cedar apple rust fungus? I'm not sure what you mean, but. Are there heritage tree apples that are naturally resistant?
Yeah.
I think there are. Yeah, I don't know any off the top of my head that are.
Yeah, I know there's at least five varieties. And like you said, I mean, I'm being called on it right now, so I don't recall.
But you can just spray milk or like good compost tea on there to fight off the fungus, right?
Possibly. I mean, that's experimental at this point. You were thinking like whey or something like that. It's got to be totally organic. That it might outcompete that fungus.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking maybe a compost tea, if made in the right proportions, might do that very same thing. But if it's too laborious, maybe that's not an apple you even want to have around there.
Right.
All right, so let's see here. Got one from Dan. Dave, saw you went to UMass and saw their permaculture on display. I'm taking a sustainable farming certificate course online through UMass Amherst, and it was helpful. Just like most colleges these days, they insert the woke identity into the curriculum. However, most of the instructors aren't too bad, except they still believe that oil is a fossil fuel that's destroying our firmament, enclosed earth. They haven't received the memo that oil is blood of the earth and that is the second most plentiful resource next to water. Anyway, if there are any vets out there, sustainable farming class there is a sustainable farming class that is VA eligible. Keep pimping.
Was he saying that one was VA eligible?
Yeah, I'm not sure what he was saying in that last part, but regarding the oil, well, you know what? I'm an abiotic oil guy, just like Colonel Fletcher Prouty. You know, the guy who Mr. X in the movie JFK was modeled after. The real life of Professor X. I mean, boy, he wrote some books like The Secret Teams and some of these others. Colonel Fletcher Prouty was one of those secret guys in the Pentagon, wicked smart, historian and a half. And he's one of those people that really talks about where this whole thing about fossil fuel came from and how they're drilling in places where there's never been a fossil below a certain level, ever found. And so how it was, and he was there when they came up with the idea of calling it fossil fuel to create the illusion that this stuff is very rare, that, you know, we're running out of it. And what the Nazis found out actually is that oil is in fact abiotic. Drill an oil well dry, wait, and it will fill back up.
Yeah.
So it's like, and he's absolutely correct. It's the second most prevalent liquid on the planet that we know of. But the powers that shouldn't be, Kissinger was just happened to be in there at that same time. All these people realize that if they can call it something that's diminishing, oh, well, they got themselves a, they got the golden goose and the egg right there.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what they've done. Like I said, go check out Colonel Fletcher Prouty, and he tells you where all the bodies were buried. And even as a kid, when they would call it fossil fuel, I was like, this makes no sense.
Yeah, you know how many dinosaurs there must have, like...
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't make any sense.
As a kid, even as a child, I was like, this is stupid. And then you hear people saying fossil fuel. No, it's not. And then Fletcher Prouty goes to tell you how and why they came up with it. It's right there in the books. It's not hard to find. And if you tell this to most people, they're like... I mean, it's right there in the books, and they extracted this and they changed the word to call it fossil fuel. So, hey, y'all, this is exactly what we're going at. I mean, this is exactly what we're talking about, the who, what, where, when, why, and how, and how you need to examine these things for yourself, y'all. But you got to remember, stay alert.
Stay alive.
SS3. They want to push me to the center like a cell. They want to spin up at the center of the next. It's me. Yeah, yeah. They want-